This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Welcome, boys and girls. It's the last Sunday of August. I know for many of you, summer ended last week. For some of us, there was no summer. For others, if you're state employed, you at least have a big holiday weekend coming up. One more down the road. But you're all welcome here on the Wake Up Call. Thanks for listening. Mr. Rusty Simpre, one of my favorite bluegrass DJs, finishing up his time. But he's still around getting in my way. Today's topic should be pretty interesting. Write down the phone numbers, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That last number is toll-free, 1-877-967-6762. And the local number, 979-0919. Because the topic today is more than just the Charlottesville-Albemarle area conversation, we're going to talk about sex education in public schools. Certainly some Charlottesville-Albemarle focus there, but a lot of what we're going to talk about, a federal grant out to a different company, charity, ladies?
They're a nonprofit.
They're a nonprofit organization. We're going to talk about how that's being used and the rights and wrongs of such. Our guest today, both returning friends of the program, Becky Reed, from the Planned Parenthood of the Blue Ridge, the grassroots organizer. What the heck does that mean?
It means I cut the grass. No, I'm just kidding.
Can I have some need?
Ha, ha, ha. No. I help people, you know, figure out who their legislators are and how their legislators are voting on issues that matter to them. Access to contraception, issues like we're going to talk about today, medically accurate sexuality education. And then I help those people, you know, figure out how to get involved in the process, make their voices heard, go down to the General Assembly in Richmond. Every year we take a number of buses down for Pro-Choice Lobby Day, 550 people at the Capitol last year. So really just making people aware of the fact that these decisions are being made and often being made poorly in a way that the majority of people don't agree with. And there is something we can do about it. We can talk to our legislators and turn things around and do more to prevent unintended pregnancies.
All right. And our number two guest, or I guess our number 1A guest, just just the number two introduction, Mary Sullivan. And Mary, you work for the university, but
I actually am housed at the University of Virginia Teen Health Center, which is part of the Children's Hospital, but I work as the Charlottesville-Albemarle Teen Pregnancy and STD Prevention Coordinator. No good acronym. No good contraction for that title. And my interest in this is, as Becky has already said, trying to reduce the number of unintended teen pregnancies. And a bigger problem that we have is the number of teenagers with sexually transmitted infections with lifelong consequences.
All right. So that is what we're going to be doing today, is talking about sex education in public schools, like I said earlier, both the right and the wrong methods. And some of that, I think, is going to come based on your own opinion. And I'm going to do my best to be devil's advocate today without bringing my own opinions into the program. Some people may be surprised at that. So let's start from the basic thing that got us all together on this. A local nonprofit, a local charitable organization. Can you call them a charity?
Yeah, well, they take nonprofit money, and they're staffed by volunteers.
Okay. So we'll stick with nonprofit. That seems to be less less risky. A local nonprofit business here in Charlottesville. There's one in the downtown area off Main Street, and there's one up 29 somewhere.
Commonwealth. Yes.
Received a federal grant, right? The money came from the U.S. federal government. Wasn't one of the private things from really wealthy people who start their own donation kind of charities.
No, it was from the Department of Health and Human Services.
And the grant was for more than $600,000 to teach some form of safe sex to middle school and high school kids.
Well, that's a description that we take issue with, because it's abstinence only until marriage education. And we would posit that it does not help teens learn about safer sex. In fact, it does not provide information that is critical in protecting them from unintended pregnancy and contracting sexually transmitted infections.
All right. So tell me why that's a problem. I mean, and let's break it down into sensible categories. The federal government, and I assume everyone, would prefer that, because we're talking about middle school and high school kids, right? So what are we talking about, 12 to 18?
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about 12 to 18-year-old kids, and would assume that everyone has the same goal of these kids not having sex before they're ready, not having unwanted children, not having STDs, and so forth.
I think you're absolutely right. In any comprehensive sexuality education program, which is what I, as a sexuality educator and someone who's been in the community for a long time, advocate, postponing sexual activity is the primary message we provide middle and high school students to prevent unhealthy physical and emotional consequences. So comprehensive sexuality education for students has at its base abstinence from sexual activity being the only way that you can prevent unintended pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections. That being said, anyone in this field understands that teenagers are as heterogeneous as adults, and so we realize that we want to support those teenagers who choose to abstain or choose to postpone sexual activity in their decision. We also want to provide information about and access to contraception and disease prevention to those teens who are sexually active. And then I would posit that there's a third group, teenagers for whom a pregnancy is not unintended and unwanted. And we have a variety of community resources that help teenagers perhaps look at a different future and different goals for themselves. And abstinence only until marriage does not look at all those different needs of teenagers.
But can't we have, as a country, who has 700 different satellite TV channels, who, has 1,000 different flavors and sizes of chips on the grocery store shelves, can't we have a variety of ways to teach kids to have safe or to avoid having a teenage pregnancy?
I think that that's what comprehensive sexuality education does, and perhaps my objection, and there's so many different layers to this, my objection is to the fact that a large amount of federal money is funding a program, and Becky also has supporting evidence for this, that research tells us is not effective in preventing early sexual activity with those consequences that we've mentioned. So these are not effective programs that are being funded with a lot of money, and that really are based on ideology rather, again, than research evidence that looks at whether or not they work.
And I think one of the simplest and most clear-cut reasons these programs are problematic is that there are just basic medical and scientific errors in these programs. In fact, in 2004, a report was released in Congress by Representative Henry Waxman. They surveyed the 13 most commonly used abstinence-only-until-marriage curricula and found that 80% of those programs have basic errors, just basic factual errors. And in addition to those errors, all kinds of, just clear-cut biases, presenting stereotypes about, men and women as scientific fact. And I have some examples here I can pull from the curricula, the curriculum that's going to be used by the Pregnancy Center. Their curriculum is called Why No. So we can talk specifically about what they intend to present in the school systems here.
But that, and just so people can get a visual image of this, why no is W-H-Y, and then the no is K-N-O-W with the N-O in capitalized letters.
Yeah.
Obviously, so you get two messages in one. We are talking with Becky Reed from the local Planned Parenthood. Aren't there two Planned Parenthoods in town?
No, we just have the one Planned Parenthood clinic up on Hydraulic Road.
All right, so there's Becky Reed is from the local Planned Parenthood, Mary Sullivan, working in the Charlottesville and Albemarle schools to help prevent teen pregnancy and STDs. As we talk about sex education in our public schools, feel free to dial us up, 979-0919-1877, WNRN Rocks. Michael will patch you through. Mary, what are what's taught in Charlottesville and Albemarle schools now, and who's doing that?
That's a great question, and it brings up another issue, which is the way that family life education, and that's been sort of the euphemism for sexuality education, the way family life education is taught in City and Albemarle County public schools is a bit of a patchwork. There is a curriculum. There are actually standards of learning attached to that curriculum, so teachers are given guidelines on what to teach and the materials they are able to use. There's more time, there's less time than curriculum to teach, so teachers often pick and choose what they cover, and that depends sometimes on their comfort level in addressing sexuality issues. Family life education teachers in the state of Virginia are mandated to receive training to teach this curriculum, but that's rarely enforced. And in fact, I went to a training this past summer where only two teachers from our area participated. Generally, family life education teachers are health and PE teachers, some of them very well trained and very comfortable, some of them not comfortable at all. So topics like basic reproduction, contraception, and sexually transmitted infections are part of the family life education curriculum, but the way it's implemented is varies widely, not just in even in one school. It can vary widely from class to class depending on who the teacher is.
And I'll just add to that, because Planned Parenthood, along with other groups in Virginia as part of the Virginia Pro-Choice Coalition, introduced a bill, it was introduced by Senator Mary Margaret Whipple, and we passed that bill. It's Senate Joint Resolution 171, and it's to have a statewide survey be conducted so we can figure out what kinds of programming is being implemented in each school district, who is implementing it, which of the 11 content areas of family life education are being covered, because it is such a, you know, a mishmash, it's such a big question mark. Anecdotally, we know that there are some districts who don't even do family life education. So we're looking to create kind of a database of what is happening out there in order to address those inconsistencies in areas where people are not being given any information at all. So,
Are all the area high school, it's required in each high school and each middle school to have this?
Well, actually, it's interesting. There's not a mandate in the state of Virginia for family life education. So it is not required that Virginia schools teach and or include family life education as part of its curriculum. But in Albemarle County and the city of Charlottesville, health and family life education are part of the school day.
A local mandate? Or just by...
I'm not sure it's a local... I wouldn't call it a mandate.
By what the local leaders call good sense.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I wouldn't call it a mandate.
Becky, I know we're going to come back to this, and so don't let me forget, because you had mentioned the Waxman, what's called the Waxman Report, and I do want to bring those things out. But I want to stick with the federal government money going to this local nonprofit group, and the fact that some people, including, I suppose, the two of you, are bothered by the fact that federal money is going to teach what you consider to be medically inaccurate information.
can I just add really quickly? It's not.
Of course.
The, it's, you know, it's really not a subjective thing objectively. It's just, it's inaccurate. And one really glaring example, again, from the WINO curriculum that they plan to implement is, just a basic scientific error. Their curriculum states that 24 chromosomes from the mother and 24 chromosomes from the father joined to create this new individual. You know, and just, you know, even sidestepping the, you know, obvious, you know, non-scientific language they're using there to describe this process, it's actually 23 chromosomes. I mean, that's just an objective. You can tell that that's just an error. And in addition, organizations like the American Medical Association, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists have all come out very strongly against abstinence-only-until-marriage programs and funding for these programs.
Right. I think you make a great point. It's not just our opinion. Society of Adolescent Medicine is another reputable organization that's come out in opposition of these programs.
Are there any organizations that either of you may call reputable that have sided with the WINO program or other similar programs?
I am not aware of organizations that have sided with that. I am aware, though, of organizations, including the American Medical Association and the American College of OBGYNs, that has said, we are not saying not to give an abstinence message to our youth. We are just saying this should be part of more comprehensive, accurate information. So I think what's really bothered me, and I'm sure Becky as well, because what sometimes happens is this debate becomes framed and polarized as a debate between Planned Parenthood on one side being the pro, throw out the condoms, tell everybody to have sex and have fun on one end, and the Charlottesville Pregnancy
well,
Center
the
on the other.
Well, that's the partisanship that our country has moved towards.
Oh, absolutely. And so
you're right or you're wrong. There is no middle.
Right. And so we polarize this debate where then if you come out in opposition of a program like this, you're being told that you're not giving an abstinence, or what I prefer to use, postponing sexual activity message to teenagers. And that's simply not the case. We are simply saying use medically accurate information and provide this in the context of comprehensive sexuality education.
So the money comes from the federal government. Is that because of who's in charge of dispensing the money? Is that because, you know, and I'm not, maybe we need to go all the way to the president. You know, I'm not asking that. You said it comes from the Department of Health and Human Services. Does the Department of Health and Human Services determine that and can pretty much, you know, everyone else pass that, just rubber stamps it?
Well, the problem is really with Congress because they have tightened up the guidelines to be even more even more ideologically focused on abstinence to the exclusion of other information about contraceptives, how to prevent sexually transmitted infection transmission. So Congress amends those guidelines and has recently tightened those up. And Mary actually has the 8-point definition of abstinence-only education as defined by the Title V Act. So she can, I'll hand it over to Mary.
Well, and There's a long history. I mean, we don't have time to go through all the history, but basically this came out of faith-based initiatives and community-based abstinence education, and it's actually becoming a bit of a cottage industry for people to use these guidelines to apply to get gifts like this. I mean, a $645,000 grant for a small community agency in Charlottesville is newsworthy. That's a lot of money to most of the nonprofits in this area. And I'm just going to read through a few of these. The ones really that, you know, teaches that, that a mutually faithful monogamous relationship in the context of marriage is the expected standard of sexual activity. Teaches that sexual activity outside the context of marriage is likely to have harmful psychological and physical side effects. Until January 2006, agencies applying for these community-based abstinence education grants from Health and Human Services had to show that the programs that they were providing or planning focused on abstinence only. The language was then switched to abstinence only until marriage in January 2006, which, you know, leaves out lesbian, gay, bisexual, questioning kids. There's so many layers to this in terms of the ideology expressed and funded.
All right, 11:21 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about sex education in public schools, where the federal grants go towards this. Your opinions on either side of it, feel free to dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. As usual, I have 3 hours worth of questions, and I can talk to myself if needed. Markets of Toggy Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly cloudy today, highs 85 to 90. Partly cloudy tonight with possible late shower or thunderstorms. Lows down to 65 to 70. Partly cloudy tomorrow, highs 80 to 85. Right now it's pretty clear across the listening area. 84 in the Valley, 82 in Lynchburg, 84 in Richmond, and a few clouds here in Charlottesville. We're at 79.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. They support WNRN and community projects around the state. For back to school, Blue Ridge has over 170 styles of outdoor footwear, from sandals for warm days to trail-friendly running shoes and hikers. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville. They're at Wintergreen and at BRMS.com. And aside from the underwriters, we need to take a moment and thank our personal supporters like Gene McCusker, Barbara Norden, and Patrick Eck, who contributed to the Wake Up Call during the spring fun drive. It's also because of them and folks who help us, like Atlas Comics and Domino's Pizza. So stay tuned to tell a friend about the Wake Up Call and other programming you enjoy here on WNRN, and be sure to support us in our upcoming fall fun drive. And we got a call. Let me poke all the right buttons. Ann?
Yes, hello.
Hey, Ann from Charlottesville. How you doing?
Great, thank you.
Question, comment?
I'm wondering how this nonprofit's curriculum is going to be put through the schools, and don't the schools have a right to say, no, this isn't what we want? We want something more comprehensive.
All right, ladies.
And you're absolutely right. Right now, this program is being implemented in surrounding county schools, but it has not yet been presented, as far as I understand, to either the Charlottesville or Albemarle County school boards. And I've been talking to school board members. There are approved speakers for family life education curricula in the city and county. So there are different community agencies that are on an approved speaker list. The Charlottesville Pregnancy Center is not on the approved speaker list for Charlottesville, and I do not believe it's on the list for Albemarle County. However, when this program comes to the attention of schools, my guess is it will come under a different name. They've set up a separate agency to market and implement the program. And so I encourage folks to stay abreast of school board meetings at which this may come up. My concern, even though it should go through the school board only, my concern is more that a teacher or a parent will say, this sounds good, let's bring it in. You know, even though it should be only through school board approval. Nationally, surveys have shown that parents, while they want their children to postpone sexual activity, and I have two teenagers myself, so I can attest to that value and hope, parents support comprehensive sexuality education in schools with abstinence being a primary message.
And I'll just add to that and let people know the separate name they've set up in order to get into the school systems. It's worth your wait. So while the fiscal agent is the Charlottesville Pregnancy Center, they are the organization that receives $645,000. They are trying to distance themselves from that organization and have set up a separate center in Rutgersville called Worth Your Weight. And again, kind of piggybacking on something Mary said earlier, they've been very quiet about this grant, which is highly unusual. You know, any community agency that received a grant of that size would have a press releases, press conference. They'd be, you know, celebrating that grant. But they've been very quiet because they know that they represent, you know, an ideology that is far outside the mainstream and that people don't agree with inaccurate information, misleading information that really actually puts our young people at risk.
And thanks for the call.
Thank you so much.
All right, boys and girls. Ann shows that the phone lines do indeed work, and you're free to call them, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's the toll-free line, because some of the surrounding counties may be in the toll-free area. Let's talk about that for a minute. The local agency, with their $645,000 grant, I never understood why they can't just make it an even amount. You know, it's like $645,306 or something. It's
exactly
ridiculously weird. It's like they divide it by pi and then figure out where the change goes. If this group is already in area counties, doesn't that show that county leaders and families are, you know, willing to accept the information and the teachings?
I don't think so, because I think this process has happened under the radar, very quietly in many localities. A lot of, you know, parents aren't in touch with what their kids are being taught in school. And in my experience, whenever, you know, as soon as we started putting these press releases out a few months ago and getting media coverage, you know, people were constantly contacting me in outrage. You know, what can I do to stop this happening in my school? I don't want my kid to receive that kind of programming. I think it's dangerous. So I think the problem is people just aren't in touch, the same way people aren't in touch with how their delegates and senators are voting in Richmond against birth control, you know. It's a busy world. There's a lot going on, and we don't, you know, keep tabs on everything. So when people are aware of this, they do get angry, because again, as Mary said, the majority of parents do want their kids to receive comprehensive, medically accurate information about sexuality.
All right, let me take a moment and thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries for their support today. Sevo Reader's Choice for burgers. Five Guys serves America's standard, fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they're open until 10 on Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center in the Hollymead Town Center, and now on the Downtown Mall here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's FIVE guys.com. All right, Michael's patching us through to another caller. And we've got Paul from here in Charlottesville. Hey, Paul.
Hello, Rick. Thank you very much for taking my call. I would like to add something that I think is essential to the conversation. One is the overwhelming amount of sexual advertising that goes on in our reality. And number two is the role that synthetic hormones are playing in the health and welfare of our young people and our society as a whole. And I'm particularly speaking to synthetic estrogen that is in all kinds of food products, all factory-raised chicken, all the milk products, ice cream, etc. This is changing our children physically, emotionally, and as long as we're talking about truth in this health class, let's approach it. I'd like to just add this to the mix. Thank you very much.
All right, Paul. Thanks for calling. An awful lot of, well, ladies, I know that, Mary, you had your headphones.
I don't mind responding to part of it. I'm sorry, my headphones aren't working well, so I didn't hear all of it. I did hear Paul bring up, though, sexualizing children through media, and there actually is a lot of attention being paid to this right now. The Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy, which is a research-based organization in Washington, D.C., has been working with networks and popular television shows, trying to get them to include messages about the consequences of sexual activity so that kids aren't watching shows and thinking that there are no negative consequences to sexual activity. I also heard Paul address the hormones, and there's a lot of research being done on that and no definitive answers yet. But I don't disagree that we live in a culture right now that downplays negative consequences of early sexual activity.
And I'll just add to that, because another difference between abstinence-only until marriage curricula and comprehensive programs is that with the abstinence-only until marriage curricula, they're dictating values to young people. They're not training young people to think for themselves. In comprehensive sexuality education, it is geared at helping young people think about their values, decide what their values and attitudes are, have that critical lens for media messages, and really teaching these young people to think for themselves as opposed to dictating to them that, this is the value, these are the values you should have, and these are the behaviors that you should adhere to. So that's another difference. They're not helping young people deal with those media messages that are so powerful and overwhelming, as research has shown us time and time again. So,
and Paul, I believe that the last part of your call about the false estrogen or extra estrogen synthetic in our food system, that's a great topic for another show. Feel free to email me, abstractme@AOL.com. I'll be glad to add that to my list of future shows, topics, and try and find some guests for it. Becky, let me jump back onto what you just commented on about in regards to Paul's phone call, 979-0919-1877, WNRN Rocks, if you want to get in on the conversation here with Becky Reed, grassroots organizer from the local Planned Parenthood of the Blue Ridge, Mary Sullivan, coordinator of teen pregnancy and STD prevention for the couple of the local school systems. You were talking about giving teenagers the education so they could make decisions and not having things forced on them.
Yeah.
All right. We do that with alcohol. We do that with political voting. They're not allowed to vote until they're a certain age. Not allowed to drink until they're a certain age. They're not allowed to join the military until they're a certain age. So there are a wide variety of categories where you can say, we're forcing you, telling you what you have to do to meet the, whether they're majority or minority thoughts on this topic. What's the difference?
I can't speak to the way we regulate all those other behaviors, but, the way we seek to regulate, sexuality among teens, it just doesn't make sense when you look at the facts. And the facts are that half of high school students have had sexual intercourse. So when you look at that statistic and then you look at the programming that we're trying to deliver to them and realize that we're not teaching them how to have safer sex, how to protect themselves from sexually transmitted infections and prevent unintended pregnancies, we realize that we're putting half of those young people at risk. Information that's too little, too late, or wrong can have long-term and life-threatening consequences, especially when we're talking about HIV transmission. And if we want to talk about some research now about these programs, or if you want to hold off on that, we have some research that's really important in illustrating how powerfully dangerous these programs can be.
We'll jump in that in a second. Let's take this call from Pam. I'm gonna try and set it up so that you ladies can not use your always faulty headphones. Pam, are you there?
Yes.
Pam from Earliesville. Fire away with your question or comment.
My comment only is I just want to make sure everyone listening realizes that you have in the studio with you two of the most passionate, educated, smart, valuable resources in the area for this subject in this area, and I just want to thank you for having them there and say hello, and just keep listening. Thanks.
Thank you, Pam.
I don't know about the the resource part, but I'll take smart, passionate, and what was the other?
Gorgeous.
Intelligent.
Rich. Yeah. No, just kidding.
No, I was all for that. Rusty, why did you bring me this? Rusty's dropping off special notes. Rusty, who's full-time job is repairing cars. Am I supposed to read this over the air like it's Rusty wants some business. Please visit Rusty at Colonial Auto. 11:35 here in the wake-up call. Please dial up and take advantage of the passionate resources that we have in the studio today with Becky Reed and Mary Sullivan. And you don't even have to know them outside of the studio to dial us up, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS.
Can I go back to what Becky was starting to say, and I'd love for her to bring up some of her points about the research. As she said, we know that half of our high school students are sexually active. By the time they graduate from high school, instruments like the Centers for Disease Control Youth Risk Behavior Survey tells us that between 75 and 80% of them are sexually active. Anecdotes that you hear from college student health centers also tell us that college students are not very good about protecting themselves from unintended pregnancies and sexually transmitted infections. And even though lots of education exists through peer health educators, I hear from a lot of them that college students don't take advantage of that. We also have recent research about the prevalence of oral sex in high school students.
And younger, that seems to be the thing.
Although some of that is anecdotal. Right.
I bought that 13 or didn't purchase
it. Oh, yeah,
it, but
the movie 13, right, which brought a lot of attention on the Oprah Winfrey show to middle school sexual activity. We found that of kids who've not had intercourse, 50% of them, I think for boys and girls, 50-55% of them have engaged in oral sex, which does have carry risks when it comes to sexually transmitted infections. And of those kids who have had intercourse, over 80% of them have engaged in oral sex. Again, high risk activity in terms of sexually transmitted infections, and a topic that's covered in comprehensive sexuality education programs.
Oh, I'd just like to throw one more statistic in there, and this is from a study put out by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and that's that only 9% of teens said they use condoms during oral sex, 9%, compared to the 55% engaging in oral sex and not engaging in vaginal intercourse, and the 80% engaging in oral sex and vaginal intercourse. So, and also to talk about something Mary just brought up, you know, we need to address specific behaviors, and we do that in comprehensive sexuality education and the risks that each behavior carries with it. And that's another problem with abstinence only until marriage education. They don't, you know, they just say be abstinent. There's no discussion of what does abstinent mean. You know, does abstinence, in, you know, are you allowed to hold hands? Are you allowed to kiss? Are you allowed to, you know, that whole range of behaviors. There's not discussion about what constitutes abstinence. So that's why we see students engaging in other behaviors, which can carry higher risks, certainly in the instance of anal sex, which, again, people who, and most of the research is done on pledgers. People who take a chastity or a virginity pledge, and that's a very common component of these programs. And we have been told that the YNO curriculum does use chastity or virginity pledges as part of their programming. So one of the studies has found that when you compare students who have taken a pledge to students who have not taken a pledge, those pledgers will delay their first intercourse for an average of 18 months. And again, 18 months is an average. And it falls well short of the stated goal, which is abstinence until marriage. And as, you know, our average age of marriage continues to rise, you know, that's, they're just falling way beyond their stated goals, which is marriage. So 18 months average delay. And then when they do engage in that first act of sexual intercourse, they're a third less likely to use contraception than their peers who did not take a pledge and had more comprehensive sexuality education programming. So, you know, again, a very concrete example of how information that's too little, too late, or wrong can result in lifelong consequences.
All right, I got Ted on the line. Ted, hold on just a second. It is 11:40 on here on the wake-up call, and I need to do a little business for the station.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, this week, a look at local girls playing male-dominated sports and showing they belong. Local entrepreneur Amy Gardner gets on the hot seat to discuss her taste for upscale shoes and unusual office supplies. Amy owns Scarpa and Rock Paper Scissors. And are we moving closer towards taking orders for custom-designed babies? That's this week's essay in The Hook. The Hook, a walk around town in just 88 pages. And let's thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support. Blue Ridge Graphics, Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. And not that you would, but don't go anywhere, because at noon, George Bell will be here. And I think he just walked in the station. He is the host of Les Temps Purdue. It's the best of 80s and 90s alternative. He refuses to play Phil Collins, Mariah Carey, or ZZ Top. But you will hear The Clash, Material Issues, and The Pogues. Requests are always welcome. That's Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only here on WNRN. All right, let's punch all the right buttons and get Ted on here. Ted, how you doing?
Doing well, doing well. This indicates an overall issue that I see where morality is being forced legislatively somehow into our lives, rather than leaving morality in the place to be taught in the home and in the church and wherever else you want. The reason I send my kids to school is so that they can get information that I myself cannot provide for them in an effective manner. I don't teach them higher math. I don't teach them science. I don't teach them a foreign language. Sex education is a whole other area of this. I don't have the information at my disposal or the time to disseminate the proper information. I want my kids to have the right information. I will teach them what I believe to be the proper behavior and the proper approach to the situation. It's good to cover that approach and cover the variety of approaches, but what I want them to get is facts. I want them to understand the science of sex, because we are all sexual creatures. Children develop at different rates. Your desire for sex and your curiosity about sex is not a switch that mom says, okay, I'm going to turn the V-chip on now. That happens naturally. And it is, and unfortunately for every one of us who's having this conversation, we all had our first sexual experience independent of what our parents said or didn't say. And we need to have the proper facts. It's a decision that every one of us is going to make on our own, and our children are going to make on our own, as scary as that is to all of us. I have two teenage daughters in high school right now. It scares the you-know-what out of me to think about it. But the fact is, it's not going to be my choice when they decide to engage in this behavior. The only thing I can do is make sure that they are well-grounded morally, well-grounded informationally. And the information I cannot provide in a complete sense. I have certainly tried to provide it. I have, you know, read the different books and presented the information to them myself. We have very open conversations in our family about sex and the whole weird emotional thing that goes on when you're talking about sex, when you meet a boy that, you know, really makes you feel, wow, man, this guy's amazing, you know, and then the way you've got to get your brain in gear when you start to feel those things. That's my job. The job of the school is to give the kinds of facts and science that we need so that we can complement one another. And I think that these kinds of programs where it's essentially a dumbing down and a pretending that there are certain aspects that don't exist, certain facts that don't exist, I think it's represented all through our society right now, and it's a creeping evil, and it's a government totalitarianism that's just, it's frightening to me. And this program you're talking about has snuck in under the radar. I stay in touch with what's going on. I hear about these discussions, and then all of a sudden I read in the paper that this group has gotten this grant.
That's why we're on the show today.
I agree. I'm just horrified that these people can sneak their way into the public school system. It's fine if you want to start your own private school and teach whatever you want to teach. That's fine. Your children's going to have to compete. Your children have to compete in the same world mine doing. If you don't teach them the full facts, let them be thrown to the wolves if you want them to be. But I'm horrified that our state government and that anybody else is even considering a let's pretend these facts don't exist kind of sex ed program. That's all I have to say.
Thanks, Ted, man.
Thank you.
All right. Call and make your own comment or question. That's what we're here for. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That is the toll-free line, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, 979-0919. This is community radio. That's why you can call and make your comment. We are talking about sex education in public schools and a federal grant that went to a abstinence-only local nonprofit group. We have Becky Reed, the grassroots organizer for Planned Parenthood of the Blue Ridge. Mary Sullivan, prevention coordinator for Charlottesville and Albemarle Schools of teen pregnancy and STDs. Now, not to to go against Ted, because I think Ted had a lot of really nice things to say and very well-educated comments. We've talked about how, and caller, just hang tight for a second. Isn't this program that they're using to scare the crap out of the kids? Isn't this like those old jail things where they take the kids to jail
scared
and
straight.
Scare them?
Yeah.
Yeah, scare them straight, is that what it's called?
Scared straight.
Isn't that what this is like?
Well, they seem to use
what
are called fear-based techniques. Actually, they're not shown to be really effective. And believe me, again, as you know, I've got three children. There are times I'm sort of like Ted. There are times that all the implications of their behaviors scare me straight. But they don't. They're not effective when they're used for alcohol and substance abuse. And using fear techniques don't seem to be very effective. But we're more concerned about the accuracy of the information. And I thought he made a great point when he talked about the interplay between what families do and what schools can do. I work with parents all the time. Parents can and should be their children's primary sexuality educators, but a lot of parents find it difficult to find all of the accurate information. And so what parents do is they promote their family's values around sexuality. He then went on to say, ultimately, it's not going to be his decision, which is correct as well, and that he relies on schools to provide the accurate information.
Real quick, Becky.
Oh, all right. I'm just going to add really quickly about the fact that these are fear-based tactics. Another common thread through these abstinence only until marriage curricula is that these programs are designed to undermine teen confidence in birth control and condom use, which is really scary. And just another concrete example from the WINO curriculum is that they state, quote, the typical failure rate for the male condom is 14% in preventing pregnancy. And that's a distortion of the facts because 14% is a failure rate for typical use, which means inconsistent or incorrect use. So it's not a typical failure rate. It's a failure rate for typical use. And what they fail to tell, what they fail to teach in these programs is that condoms are actually 97% effective in preventing unintended pregnancy when used correctly and consistently. So if they would, you know, present that accurate information and then also present information as to how to use condoms correctly and consistently.
Break out the cucumber.
Well, you know, any way they choose to do it, that information needs to be presented if we really, you know, if our goals are on reducing unintended pregnancies, protecting young people from sexually transmitted infection, and giving them skills to deal with their, you know, sexuality on a lifelong basis. You know, something Mary said I think is really important, that, you know, kids get to college where there are even higher rates of sexual activity, and they never got this information, and now they're having to deal with it, and, you know, sometimes dealing with it in a way that's harmful to themselves and others. So, you know, it's really important that people do get medically accurate information about prevention.
I asked that question just as my caller came in. Let's see if he's still there. Bob?
Yes.
Hey, Bob from Crozet dialing us up. What you got?
Well, I just have a question. What defines what's right, or is there a right and a wrong? Are there any, how is rightness and wrongness determined in life?
And put it in context for
us.
are you talking about right and wrong?
Are there any absolute rights and wrongs? Or do we just decide what's right and wrong, like moral relativism? Do we just, each person decides?
Well, I'm going to jump in on this real quick, and then I'll let the ladies get in there. So hang on for a second. I think that our previous caller, Ted, put it in a great, gave you a great answer if you managed to catch that, which is that what's right and wrong comes from personal beliefs, which often come from what you've picked up and from the people who are closest to you, from family, from friends, etc. And so right and wrong is going to change from place to place. And I may be taking things out of context a little bit on my own, but my understanding from the Becky and Mary.
When somebody decides to, you know, steal or kill somebody.
Well, I understand that, but I think what Becky and Mary are trying to say is that I think what Becky and Mary are trying to say is that that the one group is not providing enough options for you to take your right and wrong and make it your own. They are telling you what's right and wrong, and that there are other groups out there that are giving you numerous options for you to take home and think about it. Ladies?
Well, one of the things that comes to mind in listening to you, and I could be completely misinterpreting the caller's question, as part of comprehensive sexuality education, we look at relationships. When there's more than one person involved, obviously a healthy relationship is one that's mutual, where both people feel they're being cared for and not harmed. And it's interesting. Kids are as interested in talking about this as they are in talking about sexual activity itself. And so exploring with them, you know, trusting a partner, knowing that that partner cares as much about you as you care about him or her, all of that is part of looking at a healthy relationship, one where there's equality of power. I think we'd be hard-pressed to say that that always occurs in a marriage, which is sort of the primary goal for these abstinence-only until marriage programs, that all marriages are healthy and all relationships within a marriage are healthy. But I do think that looking at relationships is an important part of all of this as well.
You know, I really wanted to get into this next topic later. I'm going to sort of move on past Bob. Becky, I think I'm taking a quote of yours that I found in the newspaper. One of the guidelines for this other group, for the abstinence-only group, teaches that sexual activity outside the context of marriage is likely to have harmful psychological and physical effects. It's just so blatantly a scare tactic. I don't know whether I found that in The Progress or The Hook or some other place that I read it. And my question is, if we remove the word likely so that it just says that sexual activity outside the context of marriage can have harmful psychological and physical effects, is that okay? Does that make it an accurate statement? And I'm not talking about one out of 100,000. I'm talking about a greater number than you might find at the teenage years than you might find at your, you know, early 20s, mid-20s, married folks.
Well, you know, again, even if you change the wording, it's still about creating fear and, you know, talking more about consequences than, you know, actual information and learning skills that will help people to form healthy sexual relationships. All the, you know, all the programming aspects Mary was just talking about. Talking to people about how to, you know, protect yourself from unintended pregnancies, sexually transmitted infections, you know, and any other, you know, aspects that they have stated there. And that's from the 8-point definition of abstinence-only education. That is those are the guidelines for receiving these grants. You know, so that it remains that it is still a scare tactic. And it is set up in the absence of information to help people, form healthy sexual relationships.
All right. So educate me for a second. And we are running low on time here, 11:54 in the wake-up call. We talk about sex education and a local grant for an abstinence-only nonprofit here with Becky Reed and Mary Sullivan. Is it true or not true, fact or not, that being sexually active at the middle school and high school years plays into more likely to not go to college, being more likely to have a lesser job and lower pay and,
well,
and those
teen,
sort of things.
That would apply
or are they
for,
non-sequiturs?
No, no. That would apply for a teen parent. A teen parent is much more likely to not finish school and have fewer job prospects. And actually, one of the reasons that we also call for encouraging kids and giving them reasons and ways to postpone sexual activity is the earlier sexual activity starts, the more likely you are to have more partners, which does increase the possibility of sexually transmitted infections and pregnancies. I don't disagree with that, but proscribing sexual activity only within marriage, first of all, as Becky mentioned, I did a church sexuality program, started doing it 15 years ago. Even we at a church could not agree that we wanted to tell our children to postpone sexual activity until marriage, based on the fact that people wait to get married, and you can be in a monogamous, healthy relationship outside of marriage, for which some of us believe it's appropriate to have sexual activity be a part of that. But I think when you're talking about middle and high school students, absolutely, postponing sexual activity is a goal, but not using misinformation and fear-based tactics.
And I think one other thing that needs to be stated here is that research has shown that comprehensive sex education does not increase sexual activity. It does not lead to, you know, earlier sexual activity and more partners. And in fact, it's on the contrary. When we compare our programs to the approach to sexual education in other countries, especially Sweden, Switzerland, Netherlands, their youth actually have fewer sexual partners because they are covering, all the topics Mary discussed before. You know, what is a healthy relationship? How do I want to be treated? What are my values? What are my decisions going to be? And if we're just trying to dictate those values and dictate those behaviors and scare our young people, scare teens, you know, that doesn't result in any kind of, informed decision making about sexuality. And again, you know, the biggest thing I'd like to say about those fear-based tactics is that fear wears off. Again, those pledgers, 18 months average delay until first sexual first onset of sexual activity, and then a third less likely to use contraception.
Yes, that's why our federal government keeps breaking it out every election time. 45fix.com, we want to thank them for their support of the program today. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate, no obligation estimates are available anytime. That's 45fix.com, the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. You are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM, Sweetbriar, Amherst, Lynchburg. Maybe you're in Richmond at 103.1, Lexington 95.9, Harrisonburg 95.1, or the Lynchburg 89.9 as WNRN slowly takes over the world. I asked that last question, and we only got a couple minutes left, because the way, and again, whether it's accurate or not, and I feel that I need to be informed, even though I'm 41 or 2 or something, is that, you know, you're always sort of given this chicken and egg thing. Which comes first? You have sex and you get a crappy life, or you have a crappy life so you choose to have sex. And you come from the lower social economic status, and so those are the kids who have sex and have children before they're wanted, or because you have an unwanted teen pregnancy early in life, you can't go to college and you only get a low-paying job and you live below the poverty line. And it sounds like what you're telling me is that you can't count on either one of those things to be necessarily true, that the goal was to just stop the unwanted pregnancy and the STDs in general.
Well, I think we do have clear data about teen parents and the negative consequences of teen parenting, but that's a separate issue from teen sexual activity. That's one consequence of sexual activity is an unintended pregnancy.
You know, we never even got to some of the key factors in the hour, like homosexual teens and how they're left out of the program.
Exactly. Well, lesbian, gay, questioning teens. If you say outside the context of marriage, you're shutting them out completely. Yeah. But that is a whole nother program.
Ladies, I'm sorry that we have to finish up. George Bell was poking me in the back, ready to start Les Temps Purdue. But I do want to thank Becky Reed and Mary Sullivan for coming on today. I want to thank all the callers. Next week, if you want to be on the program, email me, abstractme@AOL.com. We're going to do a program on terrorism and how you feel about it now as we approach the five-year anniversary of 9/11 and the recent events in London and how that affects the airline industry. Abstractme@AOL.com. This program can be heard again on www.sevopodcast.com. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The wake-up call is produced by Catherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.